Sir, what's the universe of time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. At least 32 civilians have been killed in Aleppo in the past 24 hours as Syrian government warplanes and artillery hit rebel-held districts of the city for a second day. The bombardment has damaged two hospitals, a blood bank, and residential buildings in the city's eastern neighborhoods. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad says government troops are fighting to free civilians from what he called terrorists. Meanwhile, Russia said Tuesday that it had launched air attacks targeting extremists in Idlib and Homs province. U.S. President Barack Obama chose Athens, the cradle of the Western-style democracy, to deliver his likely final landmark foreign policy speech on what is his last overseas trip in office, saying the democracy that America upholds and promotes in the world is imperfect, but better than the alternatives.
Our trajectory as a country has been to support the efforts of those who believe in self-governance, who believe in those ideas that began here so many years ago.
Reflecting on his time as president, the U.S. leader said his travels shows him that people everywhere in the world desire dignity and self-determination. The U.S. and South Korea are continuing their efforts to prosecute North Korea for alleged human rights violations. The United Nations official in charge of North Korean human rights and South Korea's foreign minister plan to bring a North Korean human rights resolution before the United Nations Security Council next month. The resolution would refer the North to the International Criminal Court. Human rights groups around the world are condemning Russia's decision to withdraw from the International Criminal Court as an alarming signal of Moscow's retreat from international justice and institutions. The ICC enraged Kremlin last week by issuing a report concluding that Russia carried out military conflict against Ukraine. This is VOA News. As U.S. President-elect Donald Trump prepares to meet with his first foreign leader Thursday, he is denying press reports his transition team is in turmoil over arguments who will get top national security appointments in his administration. Writing on Twitter Wednesday that things are going smoothly, according to Mr. Trump, Trump will meet with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe in New York, with the exact time and place still to be announced. A U.S. State Department spokesman told reporters on Wednesday the Trump team has not reached out for help on protocols with foreign leaders, but they are willing to lend assistance.
We, of course, stand ready to assist the president-elect's team in any way that they deem fit. But as I said, there's been no outreach to date. But it's not for us to approve or disapprove of conversations that the president-elect is having or may have in the future with foreign leaders.
Trump made harsh remarks about Japan and other Asian nations during the campaign, demanding they pay a bigger share of the defense bill in the Asia-Pacific area, including the cost of maintaining U.S. military bases in Japan. Abe is in the United States on his way to the Asia-Pacific summit in Lima, Peru. Hillary Clinton made her first public appearance Wednesday night in Washington since conceding the presidential election to Donald Trump a week ago. Clinton said all she wanted to do for most of the past week was curl up with a good book, with a dog, and never leave the house again. But she encouraged the audience at the Children's Defense Fund event that retreating is not a viable option.
I know that over the past week, a lot of people have asked themselves whether America is the country we thought it was. The divisions laid bare by this election run deep. But please listen to me when I say this. America is worth it. Our children are worth it. Believe in our country, fight for our values, and never, ever give up.
Hillary Clinton, the president of the Children's Defense Fund, praised Clinton for her contributions to the fund and her lifelong dedication to child welfare. For details on these stories and much more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, reporting in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ugandan police have again arrested and detained former presidential candidate Dr. Kizza Besigye.
He was taken to some police station at Old Kira Road in Namugongo. You can imagine he was arrested at around 11 in the morning. He did not have lunch, he did not have any tea, he did not have any water, and even they sprayed his car because he refused to get out of his car.
Ladislas Rakafuzi is an attorney for Dr. Besigye. Authorities in South Sudan's Yei River State say they have found the bodies of 12 civilians after they had been killed and burned inside a house. And Sierra Leoneans are urged to walk to work tomorrow, Friday, to protest the government's decision to raise the price of fuel.
Over the past few days, we have had a price hike in fuel, and we decided that this is a national issue because it's going to affect the general masses, the poor people in the villages, poor people on the streets who have to ply the roads, who have to travel distance to go do their businesses.
Emmanuel Safa Abdullahi is a lawyer and one of the leaders of the Sierra Leone Renaissance Movement. The new deputy chair of SADC's parliamentary forum says she plans to use her position to push for a stronger region. Russia says it is withdrawing from the International Criminal Court, and a Malawian fashion designer eyes the global market. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's Africa's Post Roundup, and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. An attorney for Uganda's main opposition leader, Dr. Kizza Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change, says he plans to file a lawsuit against the government in Kampala after accusing the police and other security agencies of violating Dr. Besigye's rights. Police Wednesday prevented Dr. Besigye from attending a pre-arranged meeting with attorney Ladislas Rakafuzi in the capital, Kampala. He was subsequently taken to the police station after a crowd gathered at the offices of his attorney. In this interview with VOA's Peter Clotty, attorney Rakafuzi said the police have been unfair and mistreated Dr. Besigye ever since he made a decision to challenge President Yoweri Museveni during last February's elections.
We made an appointment with Dr. Besigye some days ago, and we agreed that he will come to our chambers today at 11 o'clock in the morning at the Uganda House. We have several cases we need to file against the government because it is wrong for an elite like Dr. Besigye to go through this kind of mistreatment, and it doesn't through government. Yet there are so many people also who are mistreated, but because of ignorance and because of fear of government, they cannot sue government. So he would be a kind of true leader if he showed that he has rights protected under the Constitution by doing so. So that's why we made this appointment. But it was very sad that the moment he was coming to our chambers to see us, his lawyers, and they prepare his cases, he was blocked from entering our chambers.
Where was he taken? Some people are suggesting that he was taken back to his house.
No, he was not taken to his house. He was taken to some police station at called Kira Road in Namugongo. That's where he was taken. You can imagine he was arrested at around 11 in the morning. He did not have lunch, he did not have any tea, he did not have any water, and even they sprayed his car because he refused to get out of his car.
One of the accusations against Dr. Besigye is that he often causes traffic that prevents economic activities, and that is why the police usually warn him not to use certain routes. But he defies those, and that is the major concern some people are expressing. What is your take on that?
I think they are being very unfair, they are being very mean, and they are being economical with the truth. The truth of the matter is that, like, for example, today Dr. Besigye was slated to appear at the High Court to answer his bail, and also to appear at the Nakawa Chief Magistrate's Court also to answer his bail. He completed those errands without attracting any traffic. When he attempted to come to our office, he was blocked. And once he was blocked, thousands and thousands and thousands of people gathered, you see. So he never is the police to blame. Why did they block him? You see, they know that, you see, the moment Dr. Besigye is identified by the crowd, and especially once the crowds know that he's being mistreated, that he's being unjustly treated, those crowds will always come around. You see, Dr. Besigye, once he's left alone to move on his own errands, nothing happens. But the police is the one which provoked the crowds to appear.
The issue is that he has vowed to continue his defying campaign, irrespective of the fact that the elections have been done, conducted, and it's over with. He still continues with his defiance campaign, and that is one of the reasons why he's been upended from carrying out such things that really undermines the security in Kampala, to be specific.
No. I think that is not very correct. You see, one thing... By the way, opposing Museveni is a kind of defiance. You see, it's not the normal kind of thing that is written in constitutions whereby there is a opposition which is the natural, which is expected like in so many other countries. It's a kind of defiance. You have to give up all your freedom in order to be able to oppose Museveni. Because once you oppose him, you become a target for all the inconveniences the state is able to load upon you. So it is a kind of defiance in itself.
Ladislaus Rakafuzi is an attorney for Uganda's main opposition leader, Dr. Chisa Besigye. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from the capital, Kampala. A new national movement called the Sierra Leone Renaissance Movement is calling on Sierra Leoneans to walk to their workplaces tomorrow Friday as a protest against the government's decision to raise the price of fuel. The government announced last week to end subsidy on petroleum products, raising the prices of gasoline, kerosene, diesel, and fuel oil. Presidential spokesman Abdoulaye Birete told VOA this week that removing the subsidy was necessary to address the loss of revenue caused by the Ebola crisis, as well as declining global prices of iron ore. Emmanuel Safa Abdoulaye, a lawyer and one of the leaders of the Sierra Leone Renaissance Movement, says the group wants to make clear to the government that it is not fair to put the country's economic problems on the heads of the poor. He says Friday's walk to work is one of the pressure tactics that the group is engaged in.
We had a couple of actions that we had done. Last Monday, we had declared last Monday a Black Monday, in which we urged the aliens to wear black to work to show that the hike in fuel price is kind of a gloomy situation which we need to mourn. After that, we had a couple of radio conversations, a lot of radio discussions, and people are asking us to replicate the Black Monday on every Monday, which is going to happen next week Monday. Now, we're going to do what we call a walk-to-work program, which is basically calling on Sierra Leoneans to not ride vehicles, not take public transport when they're going to work, to just walk and show protest to the government that there is too much hike in the price and it's going to affect the lives and well-being of people.
The police have said that in order for anyone to demonstrate, they should get permit. They do get permit from the police.
I think there has been quite a number of misconceptions about what the law actually states. And I think over the years, a lot of people have asked the police for permit. Now, the Public Order Act, which the police is using to coerce people to get permits, basically states that you can ask the police for assistance, which means they should provide you security when you demonstrate or when you protest. It doesn't state or it doesn't require citizens to ask the police to grant them permits, because over the past year, police officers and police top brass have abused that process and refused people the right to assemble or associate with people on any national significant issue, and particularly when it's a kind of anti-governmental protest. So we think first and foremost, as a movement, young people looking for change, we've started talking to the general populace that there is no requirement for a police permit. We have written a letter on Monday, on the 14th of November, to the Sierra Leone police, and we have asked them to provide us assistance as we do our procession. So we are moving the discourse from the issue of police permit to police assistance, which is actually the right situation.
The government says that the end of the subsidies, fuel subsidies, and also, for example, the increase in the electricity cost, these are all necessary because it has seen a plummet in the revenue from, say, iron ore, and also because of the Ebola situation, the government revenue has been depleted.
Well, ending the subsidy is not the question, and we do understand that there are times when the government will take drastic measures to cut expenditure. But the question is, how much money was being paid, for example, per liter on the subsidies, and how much is the increment? What we know, for example, there was about 6 or 7% subsidies government was paying, and now we have 62% increment in fuel. So what we have concluded is the government is trying to let the people bear the brunt of an economic crunch that could have been partly avoided.
Emmanuel, you know, I read an article from one of the Sierra Leone newspapers saying that perhaps organizations like your organizations are being pushed by some people in the opposition whose only interest is to serve themselves.
We have made this point very clear. The Renaissance movement is made up of cross-party young people, youth, and even elderly people. We don't carry the agenda of an opposition. If the opposition thinks they are not strong enough to carry the agenda for themselves, we are not responsible for carrying it. What we will be doing basically is we are seeking the interests of Sierra Leoneans.
Emmanuel Safa Abdullahi is one of the leaders of the Sierra Leone Renaissance Movement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 17th. Let's give shout-out to listeners on our affiliate station, Sky 106.6 FM in Freetown, Sierra Leone, and KISS 104 FM in Bow, Sierra Leone. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Authorities in South Sudan's Yei River State say they found 12 bodies of civilians killed and burned inside a house near Yei Town. It's believed the victims were killed last week. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
The mothers went unreported for a week because relatives and friends were too afraid to go inside the house. Yei River State Minister of Local Government and Law Enforcement, Yongule Anthanasio, says seven of the bodies burned beyond recognition were buried yesterday by state authorities in Yei. The other five victims were buried by relatives. Anthanasio says all of the victims had their hands tied behind their backs and were shot before being set on fire.
It is very shocking. My dear, it is very shocking. Even me yesterday, the whole of yesterday, I did not eat anything. Very shocking and very horrible. As I said, we really condemn it in the strongest term possible. And our hearts pour in grief and solidarity with the families of the beloved lost one.
Officials say one person survived the attack. A relative of one of the victims who did not want to identify for fear of retribution by the killer says he believes the victims were targeted because six of the deceased were from the same family. Anthanasio says investigations are underway, but no one has been arrested in connection with the killings. He urged residents to be on alert.
This is a critical moment, but let us stay firm and observant of whatever happened. For our girls, women, please, we have always encouraged that don't move alone. Don't move at wrong times. Don't move to isolated places, because you will be a victim.
Meanwhile, the Lujulo County Commissioner, who has resigned from his position, says the security situation in Yei worsens by the day. Jacob Toti Fenosa says he would rather resign than stand by and watch citizens suffer.
Last week after the rebels dislodged the government forces from Senema, then they came and joined the Godo. Upon the arrival, they went up to one of the markets, and they burned down the market, and they killed one church leader. And yesterday, also, I received the report, and we asked that the government forces also came up to Nyeri, and they killed the headmaster, and they dispersed people, I think, were shooting in the air, and people are really running up and down for their life. And this really didn't go well with me, because as a leader, I can't be working for the government that's killing my people.
Toti says authorities know where the rebels are and should apprehend them and not go after innocent civilians. He says many civilians are fleeing the area because they no longer trust government forces to protect them. Attempts to reach SPLA spokesman Brigadier General Lul Rai Kong for comments on this story was unsuccessful. Yei River State Governor David Lokonga says he has not received an official resignation letter from Toti.
I don't get an official resignation letter, and he was given a leave to Arua. Then up to now, I'm waiting for his letter.
Governor Lokonga insists that the Lujulo Payam is calm and peaceful. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
Zimbabwean and ZANU-PF Senator Monica Musvanga, who was recently elected deputy chair of the SADC Parliamentary Forum, says she plans to use her position to push for a stronger and more efficient region. She tells reporter Marvelous Nyahuye of VOA Zimbabwe program that the Parliamentary Forum has an influential role to play in developing the SADC region and the African continent as a whole.
We do improve the lives of people in our region. Our main job, we're looking at many critical issues which make the lives of our people better. We are well known for having come up with a model law on eradication of early child marriages, and also not just early child marriages, but also protecting young girls who are in marriage. We are also known for trying to promote trade between our countries. You can see it's very difficult to trade between Zimbabwe and DRC, for example, between Zimbabwe and Angola, for example. And even accessibility is also a problem. To fly from Harare to Angola, one would have to go through certain countries before you get there. This is the accessibility we as members of parliament are trying to promote. This is a platform where all speakers of our parliaments come. Every year we've got more than two meetings. And this is where we discuss these issues. How do we tackle these problems which are affecting our region? You know, when you move as a bloc, the impact is felt much better.
What are some of the most burning issues facing some of these other countries, including Zimbabwe, that you're expecting to be handling under your new portfolio?
We are talking about issues of lack of electricity in our area, because whatever development which we are looking for into our region, whether it's foreign direct investment, we need electricity. We are going to beneficiate and add value to the mineral resources we have in our region. We need electricity. We need to move as a bloc, look at the Inga Dam program or project, which has been lying on the shelves for so long, to see how can the region have effectively and efficiently add value to our natural resources, which at the moment are being exported as raw form. And as such, the region is losing out a lot. So these are the issues which we look at as a SADC parliamentary forum. And this is what I'll be doing then. I'll be spearheading as one of the deputy speakers, because my speaker is the speaker of Angola, and I'll be deputizing him. We'll provide this platform where earnestly members of parliament from the 15 countries come and share experiences, come and compare what is happening in each country, where we are going wrong. Look at the policies and laws we are putting in parliament. How are they helping our people? And if they are not helping our people, what is that we can do to make sure that whatever we do helps the people who have elected us into parliament?
Monica Musvanga of Zimbabwe is the newly elected deputy chair of the SADC Parliamentary Forum. She was speaking with reporter Marvelous Nyahuye of VOA Zimbabwe program. Russia's announcement Wednesday that it is withdrawing from the International Criminal Court is a symbolic blow to international justice, but will have no practical effect on the court, experts said. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
The Rome Statute created the court in 1998. 2 years later, Moscow signed on to but never ratified it. In withdrawing their signature, Moscow's foreign ministry accused the Hague-based court of not being truly independent and dismissed its work as one-sided and inefficient. The move comes a day after the court's chief prosecutor issued a report stating that the situation in Crimea and the city of Sevastopol factually amounts to an ongoing state of occupation by Russia over Ukraine. Moscow annexed the Ukrainian territory in March 2014 after a widely criticized referendum. Rights experts, including Human Rights Watch's Elizabeth Evanson, said Moscow's move would have no real effect on the court's work.
There's really no practical effect. In fact, Russia, even though it signed the ICC, it was never a member of the court. So this is really far from big news for the ICC itself.
Evanson said it does point to Russia's retreat from international commitments and justice. She said that Human Rights Watch sees that as part of a broader pattern of the harm Moscow is doing to ordinary people and their access to justice. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
One of Malawi's fashion designers, Lily Alfonso, has shown her creations on catwalks in London, Paris, and Amsterdam, and her clothes are on store racks in South Africa. The 35-year-old has been working to take her brand global while also striving to make a difference in her community. Lamek Masina has her story for VOA from Lilongwe.
Lily Afonso gets right to work.
The ones in 32, 34, 35, 36, 38. So I'll send you sizes right away after this.
Her passion for fashion started at the age of six.
Every time I look at any cloth that is there for me, quickly I would want to change into what I like. Pretty much I'll cut a hand, I'll make it short, I'll be almost half naked most of the time, but I used to get in trouble.
She started her own tailoring business, and in 2010 she was named the best designer at a local fashion show here in the capital, Lilongwe.
So that motivated me more to say everything is possible. The person who invented the car, even the plane, he had to start with a dream. What would he stop me?
And her business has grown.
We've expanded to Zimbabwe, South Africa, UK, America is individually, but South Africa, then we've gone into shops now.
That's reporter Lamek Masina in Lilongwe. And here now is Samson O'Malley with today's Africa Sports Roundup. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with results of the international friendlies played on Tuesday involving African national teams. Kenya's Harambe Stars continue to impress in their international friendlies as they edged Liberia 1-0 at the Kasarani Stadium in Nairobi. The hosts came into the game on the back of another impressive 1-0 win over Mozambique at the same venue, with coach Stanley Okumbi making four changes in the lineup.
We must make sure that we score as many goals as possible. We need to convert the chances that we are getting and push it more.
Liberian coach James Deba was critical of the officiating, which he termed as bad and unfortunate.
The referee were bad. The goal, we saw the replay was offside. And you cannot build a team like that. Is Kenya want to progress? These are young boys who brought to try them. And you can't even win. The officiating were bad, man. I'm not impressed, seriously.
In Maputo, Mozambique held South Africa to a 1-1 draw. Bafana Bafana fighting back from a goal down to retain their unbeaten record against the Mambas. In other results, it was a string of draws as Gabon and Comoros settled for a 1-1 scoreline, same as Tunisia and Mauritania, who played a 0-0 draw. Morocco defeated Togo 2-1. On ahead of the 10th Women's African Cup of Nations, Cameroon 2016, Super Falcons coach Florence Omagbemi says the Nigerian senior women national team are ready to defend their African Women Cup of Nations title as they leave for Cameroon on Wednesday. The team will open their campaign against Mali on November the 20th, and Omagbemi is confident the girls will put up a good performance against the fellow West Africans and also qualify from the group.
As a champion and a defending champion, any situation you find yourself, you want to make use of it very well. So I would say we will try to do our best with where we are right now and not to make sure we don't let Nigeria down when we go to Cameroon.
Osinachi Ohale is a Super Falcons vice cap.
We are very, very in good shape. We are very positive, and then we responded well to our training sessions. So we have no worries.
Nigeria have won the championship a record 7 times since the inception in 1998. And Bayana Bayana arrived Cameroon on Tuesday to participate in the Women's African Cup of Nations. Interim head coach Desiree Ellis is adamant her players are ready for the showpiece.
As we get closer to the first game, we'll concentrate on the analysis of Zimbabwe and see how we can outsmart them, because obviously they've also seen us play.
Bayana are four-time runners-up and find themselves in Group A with host Cameroon, Egypt and neighbours Zimbabwe. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I'm Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Over to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Thursday, November 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. Some things change, some remain the same. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC GMT right here on VOA Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.